Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spiders. First off, a huge shout out to all the mothers out there. Happy Mother's Day. Almost didn't do this one because, well, two reasons. Number one, it's Mother's Day, and I felt kind of bad locking myself away upstairs for a couple hours to do the podcast, but Billy had work to do, so I figured, what the heck, we're going to go out to dinner later on. And the other reason is, if you can't tell by the sound of my voice, I ended up picking up what I think was probably the flu earlier this week. I got rid of it rather quickly, but it's resulted in a sinus infection, which is fantastic. I've unfortunately been plagued by bad sinus infections through most of my adult life. I hadn't had one in a while, and I was saying the other day, and it cracks me up when this stuff happens, because I don't believe in this, you know, jinxing yourself, but I was just telling Billy the other day, man, it's been years since I got a really bad sinus infection, and now here we are. So I can't, my whole head's stuffed up. I get actually really bad pain in my face, through my teeth, my jaw. It's been really rough, and I'm hoping I can get through the entire podcast without having to pause repeatedly when I get waves of pain through my face. But you know what? I figured it's Mother's Day. People are probably traveling. What the heck? We'll do the podcast. I didn't want to miss. I've been on a roll, and again, part of this is due to you guys all helping me out when I made the call out and said, hey, give me some ideas for future podcasts. I've got a bunch of stuff to work with, which was absolutely fantastic, because that's the biggest thing for me is coming up with the ideas, coming up with an idea that has enough merit to it that I'm not going to walk away from it and go, why did I bother doing that? There's no meat to that. And there's been times where I've come up with what I thought were good ideas. I sit down to do them on the podcast and I walk away and I'm not pleased with them. Oddly, these are some of the ones that people love, some of the podcasts they love. So that's why I'm a terrible judge of what works and what doesn't sometimes. But I do appreciate, again, the people that came out and gave me podcast ideas. As a matter of fact, the one we're doing today was one that somebody gave me when I reached out. So we're here. We're going to do it. We're going to go through it. First off, I want to go back to last week's episode where we did the D. pentalorus or tiger rump versus H. formosus, the pumpkin patch. This was a fun one for me because I have both and I love both. And as I mentioned, the pumpkin patch is always going to have a special place in my heart because it was the first dwarf species I kept. It was at the time the smallest sling I had ever raised up. It was the first spider that I ever successfully paired. So a lot going on there. However, after getting the Davis pentalorus and seeing how absolutely cool and gorgeous they are, the patterning, the colors, that one's really grown on me. So I could see it going either way. But the first one we got was from Mitch. This is so tough. My pentalorus is always visible, but my formosus is incredibly reclusive. I give the slightest edge to the formosus. She really makes my night when I catch her out. It's kind of funny because I think a lot of us that are in the hobby discuss the fact that sometimes the ones we love the most are the ones we never see. And I've had people tell me before, after I've said, like, that comes to mind, Selena Cosmia crassipes. I remember talking about how I hadn't seen mine out in years. I knew she was there. I'd see like little feet and stuff. And somebody's like, how can that be your favorite spider if you never see her? And I'm like, because when you do see her, it's like an event. It's like going out in the wild and seeing something in the wild. Like, you're shocked that, the serendipity of the fact that you actually showed up at the time this thing was out and about. So I agree with you there. I definitely appreciate the sentiment that sometimes the ones that you don't see all that much become favorites because you don't see them all that much. When you do, it's extra special. Next one is from Picksteel. Listen to this while I'm carrying home my little H. formosus sling I just got from a local breeder. She was 10 euros in Germany and is super tiny. That's awesome. Congrats on getting one. Yeah, they start off, the good news is they start off really tiny. However, they are very, overall, I found them to be very, very hardy spiders. So if you're going to start with a tiny one, somebody just asked me, I want to start with a dwarf, but I'm afraid of the tiny slings. Which species would you encourage me to start with? And I immediately jumped to the pumpkin patches, the H. formosus. So the good news is they eat really well. They will scavenge feed. They might freak you out by burrowing a little bit. I think I've shared the story before where that was the first time I ever dug up a spider. I had three babies, three little tiny slings. I hadn't seen one of them forever. I assumed it was dead. I opened up the vial, poured all the dirt out, got all the dirt out, found one little really angry spider in there. But they do grow very quickly, so it won't be long before you have a reasonably sized specimen on your hands. And then depending on your temperatures, it might not be long till you have a full-grown adult male. So that's a great grab there. I hope you enjoy it. Next one's from Vespers. Thank you for this episode. I'm getting back into the hobby after a 10-year absence and got a D. pentalorus thinking it was a pumpkin patch. I was wondering how they differed, so this was very timely info. Glad we can help. Yeah, they're definitely very unique. It's funny because they're both unique in their own right. So they're very different looking spiders. I do think they get confused with one another. I know when I first was looking at pumpkin patch, I had in my head that I was looking for the pentalorus. This was years ago. And then I realized there were two, you know, totally different looking spiders, but they're both very, very attractive spiders. You can't lose with either. I posted up a picture on Instagram a while back of my D. pentalaris shortly after she molted, and I was shocked with just the colors on them. The color and the patterning is just amazing. So thanks for chiming in, Vespers. Isaac Smith, thanks so much for doing this episode. It was very helpful. Really appreciate it. Glad we could be helpful. Next one is from Esco Ripati Husansari. I'm going to say sorry for probably butchering your last name. I really feel bad. So please let me know how to pronounce it, and I will make sure I correct it next episode. But Esco says, I'm not in the hobby, but I was thinking about it. Where I live in the summer, it's too hot. In the winter, it's too cold. I listen to the podcast to get knowledge. Thanks for the great podcast. Well, thank you. And I love hearing that people are listening to us that haven't gotten in the hobby yet, because I think a lot of the stuff I put out, as we discussed earlier, is geared toward people that are just coming in or just came in, so that they have that information in one spot. So hopefully you end up joining the hobby. And if you do, make sure you let us know what you end up starting with. And then the last one's from Rex. I have 3 pumpkin patches and they have been a dream. They're still babies. I took this as a learning opportunity of the other species to compare. I'm too impatient for the colors to develop. And I think that's a big one with the pumpkin patch, one that a lot of people don't realize, again, is the fact that they do start with those colors right off the bat, which is great, because how many slings can you say you start off with a sling that looks exactly like the adult? A lot of times you pick up these little brown slings and you're waiting for them to march on to, you know, young adulthood, so that you can see those colors. So I do think that is a perk for the H. formosus. So thank you everybody that took the time to chime in. Now, obviously, today's topic is going to be the heavy webbing spiders. Which ones are the heaviest webbers in my collection? Now, this one came to me from AlecTodd4581 on a YouTube comment. He said, great video, Tom. Love your podcast. Not sure if you've done a video podcast on the top heaviest webbers, but would love to see it. And my initial gut response was to respond, yeah, of course I've done one. And then I went and did a search and couldn't find anything. I don't know what happened, because I know I planned on doing this a while back. So here we are, and I apologize to people. I know other folks have suggested this topic before, so I'm sure there's some people out there right now listening to this go, hey, wait a minute, I suggested this years ago. I apologize. I honestly thought I had done one. I've been doing this stuff long enough. I mean, 10 years with the YouTube. What are we on, the 8th year or 7th year for the podcast? You start to lose track of what you cover. So I'm glad that I didn't do it yet, because this is going to be a fun topic. I'm looking for some of these ones that, you know, were just kind of fun ones to go through and discuss some of the things I've seen. Now, a couple comments and things I want to get out of the way before we delve into this. Number one, I don't ever like to frame these as a top 10 list, because that almost says definitively, all right, I'm saying number 10 isn't as good as number one. And that's difficult to do, especially when talking about spiders and their behaviors. And what I mean by that is, for every spider I have on this list, somebody out there is going to have that oddball that doesn't do the webbing. And I know it's coming. I know there's going to be people. I heard just the other day, I received an email from somebody that was freaking out because they've had their GBB for almost 2 years. It's done very little webbing. It's thriving. It's molting. It's eating. It doesn't seem to be affected by the fact it doesn't have webbing. But they're like, is there something wrong with my spider? No, you just have an oddball. It happens at times. They can have their own unique, quote unquote, personalities when it comes to the behaviors that we expect to see from them. Sometimes they just don't fulfill those expectations and they kind of do their own little thing. So I want to make that very clear. Number two, obviously, I haven't kept every single type of spider out there, so I can't speak with authority on which ones, on all the spiders that are available, which ones are the best webbers. This is what I've seen and what I'm seeing now in my own collection. So I want to make that very, very clear, because I know some folks will be like, well, what about this species? Well, that's why at the end of this video, I'm going to ask people to chime in with which species they have kept that they have experience with that they've found are heavy webbers, so we can add to it next episode. So this is what I've seen. What have you guys seen? Which species do I not have in here that you keep that you've seen a lot of webbing from? Number three, I think we're on number three. Number three, this isn't limited to just tarantulas. I want to make that clear. We're doing the heaviest webbing spiders. Obviously, it's Tom's Big Spiders, not just Tom's Tarantulas. We shot that name down, luckily, early on. And I would like to comment on some spiders that aren't tarantulas that do some heavy webbing, because sometimes people will ask me just, what's a heavily webbing spider? It doesn't have to be a tarantula. So we're going to throw some of those in there as well. So just a heads up, there will be some non-tarantulas in here. So you're not mistaken if you get to the end of this and go, I didn't know that was a tarantula. It probably wasn't a tarantula. And obviously, I'll make that very, very clear. And then last of all, this can be tricky because we're going to focus on old world fossorials. I have had a lot of experience with old world fossorials, and here's the deal with them. Some of them burrow, some of them decide to web up top. So I may have a species of spider that is tearing it up top with a webbing, just tons of webbing, didn't do much burrowing. You may have one that just burrowed and does it a little webbing around the mouth of the burrow. That's the nature of the beast. So some of the ones I'm going to mention on this, and obviously I'll make it clear which ones they are. You may have one that burrows and doesn't do a lot of webbing. You may have one that does webbing up top, not a lot of burrowing. And you may have one, like one of the ones I have on this list, that has done both. So we want to make that clear because it's kind of a crapshoot, for lack of a better term, with some of these old world Asian fossorial species. Some of them love to do a lot of webbing. Some of them don't do a lot of webbing. It all depends. And I've had some that are in the exact same type of enclosure. One of them a web, one of them a burrow. So I'm going to put it on there because, again, what I did before this video is I went around and I walked, you know, the entire tarantula room and made notes of which ones had a lot of webbing and kind of, I kind of narrowed it down to the ones that had full coverage, meaning they covered the entire surface of their enclosure. It's all the substrate has webbing. It's webbing. It's going over dishes. It's going up the side. It's going up anchor points. It's going up fake plants. It's going up real plants. So that's what we looked for, full coverage, because we have a couple species that I was borderline going to put on this list, but they didn't get that full coverage. So that's what I used for my benchmark is, all right, these, anybody that's got this, I will consider and put on the list. So as a result, the first honorable mention we have on here is Monocentropus balfouri, or the Socotra Island blue baboon. I have one that I keep by itself. I obviously have the communal, the five females that are still left, still doing well. And both of them, both the single one and the ones together, did a lot of webbing. The single one, I came close to putting her on this list because she has a nice little webbed area, but she only takes up maybe a third of the enclosure, not even half. It's webbed up a great deal, but it doesn't extend outward. And she's been in there for quite some time. I've had her, I realize now she's well over 10 years old. So she's been in that enclosure for quite a while and hasn't quite filled it all up. She stopped with the webbing. I found with my heavy webbers, they tend to tear stuff down, redo it, keep webbing. So that was one that kind of honorable mention because I've heard other folks that have seen a lot more webbing. And then as far as the communal ones, they did a lot of webbing when I first put them in the communal. It was so cool to see them all working together to web things up. But since then, a lot of the webbing has deteriorated. They've turned it down. There is some webbing in there, but it's not nearly what you'd expect to see from a, you know, five spiders, adult spiders working together in that size of an area. Now, I know if you look at the million other communals that are out there now and people have them, you get a lot of webbing with them because I think a lot of folks have, you know, 10, 20, 30, 100, 200 in a tank now. And together they create so much webbing, but this is just what I've seen in my own collection. So I put an honorable mention because I think some people are going to have ones that are heavy webbers. Some might not have as much webbing. I have found with this species, it's one that does like to do a little bit of burrowing and then web up on the surface. So honorable mention. Mentioned Monocentropus balfouri. Now, the next one on this list, which I believe is number 12, we were just talking about last week, and I think I said she hadn't webbed all that much, and then I looked at her today, and I'm like, what was I talking about? She webbed a great deal, but she's also very visible. I'm talking about my Haplolepis formosus, or my Haplolepis species Columbia large, the pumpkin patch. I had my last female, B. Arthur, did quite a bit of webbing. She webbed up. She was in a smaller enclosure than I wish I'd put her in something bigger in retrospect. She did find it, but this one's in a little bigger one. She had more room to web, but she had webbed up quite a bit, had a lot of webbing. I remember it was difficult trying to moisten part of the substrate because the water would just pool on that webbing. But her daughter, same thing. She is in an 8x8x12 acrylic enclosure. She has webbed it from corner to corner. There are little web structures going all over the place. She has a little burrow. She's webbed around that. So she has a great deal of webbing. She reached and met that benchmark of webbing up the entire surface of it, and she continues to web. That's one of the things I look at too, and kind of a caveat is that the ones that don't just web up and then stop, the ones that are always continuing to web, she continues to web. And again, the nice part about it is where B. Arthur was a little more reclusive and would kind of hide in her webbing when disturbed. She had like a piece of cork bark. She'd webbed all the way out from it on the plastic plants, and she kind of hid in that area when disturbed. Her daughter is usually, I guess we're calling her Betty White now. Somebody recommended that one. I love it. I keep going with the Golden Girls theme with the Haplolepis species. She has webbed up a lot more, but again, that might be because I've given her a much larger enclosure. So again, that's something that changed a bit. And I think part of the deal was back when I got her, that was 12 years ago or so. There wasn't as much. That was back when I was using the ExoTerra breeding boxes. I put her in one of the small 8x8 ones. And it, nowadays, I don't use those anymore because I have other things that I like more. So Hopalopus formosus, definitely one that can do some webbing. Number 11 on this one, we have a Somopius species. We have Somopius redunculus, or the Costa Rican orange mouth. I have two girls. Both did a lot of webbing, although one did more than the other. One of them webbed up the entire cork bark. I had plants in there. She webbed up all the plants and killed them. She webbed all the way down the bottom, webbed herself little tunnels behind the cork bark, into the cork bark, around the cork bark. Tons, copious amounts of webbing festooning from everywhere. And then the other one did a lot of webbing, but kind of tore some of it down. And fun fact, she lives almost terrestrially. She dug underneath behind the cork bark, and she stays on the ground and has a little web den around the base of the cork bark. So different behavior there for a Somopius. Obviously, Somopius species, all the slings I've had have done some deal of, you know, some bit of burrowing early on. And then usually as they get older, they come out and about and they sit out more like true arboreal species. Although I will say my Somopius victorii did the same thing. It webbed all a lot of webbing in its closure. So this one could almost be an honorable mention. But she hides behind her cork bark, behind the, created a web burrow behind it, and she comes up. So that's another one that did a lot of webbing. But my Somopius redunculus, definitely this one female in particular, has done a lot of webbing, enough to be considered. She's covered the entire enclosure a couple times over. She continues to do webbing. Every time I go in there, something else has changed. So Somopius redunculus, the Costa Rican orange mouth, definitely one of my heavier webbers. Now, next up, we have one of those Asian fossorials that I discussed earlier. This one would have been higher up on the list, but recently she started tearing down her webbing. Now, whether or not she's going to do more webbing, I'm not sure, but there was a point where she had completely webbed the entire upper part of her enclosure right to the top, the lid. I had her in one of those five-gallon, I want to say it's ZooMed makes them. It's a glass aquarium with a sliding top on it. And she had webbed all the way up to the sliding top to the point where I was worried it was going to become one of those situations where every time I pulled the top off, it would rip the webbing out and trigger the spider. But it hasn't been an issue lately because she tore a lot of it down. I'm talking about my Chelobrachys fimbriatus, or Indian violet. She had done so much beautiful webbing. Luckily, I have footage of this because I do want to make a video of it eventually. And I had taken some footage trying to get pictures of her out and about, and you can see all the webbing. She blanketed the surface, again, to the point where I went to add water, because this is a moisture-dependent species. You want to keep those lower levels moist. When I'd go to add water, I would have to cut away some of the webbing from the side of the enclosure and try to pour the water down between the webbing and the enclosure to get the sink down beneath, because if I tried to just pour water on the top, it would pool on the webbing or go into her tunnel, kind of startle her, and she'd burst out for a minute, like, hey, what's going on? But now, unfortunately, she's torn a lot of that down. Not sure. I love when spiders like just arbitrarily change things. Like, we don't consider them very intelligent animals. I'm going off on a little side note here, but it's always something that I wonder about. We don't consider them very intelligent animals, although we're still debating how intelligent they are, whether or not they can actually learn, if it's stimulus response, do they, you know, all of that stuff. But then every once in a while you see signs of like, what got into the spider? It webs up the whole enclosure. It's living there for a couple of years doing great. And then one day it comes up and goes, yeah, you know what? Ah, I don't like this webbing anymore. And it rips it all down and doesn't bother to redo it. What goes on in their little spider heads? I always find that type of stuff very curious and wonder what triggers that type of behavior. What made the spider suddenly change it? Was it something environmental? Was it getting sick of me tearing the webbing off every time I opened it? I don't know, but anyway, I digress. The Chelobrachys fimbriatus I have did a ton of webbing, and out of all my Chelobrachys species, I have a Chelobrachys guangxiensis that has been in her closure for a while. She webbed up a bit on the surface. There's some decent webbing on the surface, but it was all just kind of surface webbing, like what you would do in front of your burrow entrances. There wasn't really any big peaks or, you know, going up the side of the enclosure, so she didn't make the list. But the C. fimbriatus definitely surprised me. And this was one when I set her up. There's a video on YouTube where I set her up and I said I left room up top for A, her to deposit dirt when she brings it up from the bottom, but B, in case she wanted to web, I left the room up top and it almost wasn't enough. But luckily, it ended up okay in the end. So Chelobrachys fimbriatus, I got her here at 10th place, but the numbers are all kind of arbitrary. Again, she would have been higher up on the list, tore it all down, but man, while it was there, it was amazing. Now, number 9, I have 4 of the species in this genus, and this one was the one that by far has done the most consistent webbing. I have 2 of these, and both of them right now need a rehousing. I'm getting some new enclosures. I have a certain style enclosure I want to put them all in. I'm going to do basically a genus review as I rehouse the four different species at the same time. So I got to get the enclosures for that. That'll be something I do this summer when I have a little more time. But I'm talking about Ephebopus or Ephebopus murinus or the skeleton tarantula. I have two juvenile / young adults, both webbed up way more than the other Ephebopus or Ephebopus species that I keep. They webbed up all around. They have two burrow entrances. They webbed up from the burrow entrances, up the side of the enclosure, around the top, down the other side, just a copious amount of webbing all around. And that was one of the ones this morning I went through with a flashlight, and I was like, maybe it'll be, I'll have to include one of the Rufusins did some webbing. The Rufusins built more like the little volcanoes, little turrets using the leaf litter and some webbing. Same thing with the Caignognathus, the Blue Fangs. They built the turrets. Both of them built little turrets. And the Udaman, they actually dug tunnels underneath, have a couple entrances. They did some webbing around the top, but not anywhere near as much webbing as the skeleton tarantulas, the Ephebopus murinus. So I'm really curious to see what they do once they are rehoused. I'm looking at the Authentic Joy enclosures. I think I mentioned those before. I got some. The creator of them has since, we went back and forth, and I showed her that they definitely needed some more ventilation. She's added double the ventilation now. I like the fact that they are a little narrower but deeper than most enclosures, so I can put a lot of substrate up there in there, but also leave room up top because I'm hoping to see maybe some of them build up those dirt turrets, those volcanoes, if you will, to hunt from. So we'll see. I can't wait to do that one, honestly. I'm going to buy a bunch of these enclosures and get them all at once. Very excited about that one, but we'll see if they continue. Maybe it's something I'm going to revisit. Maybe I put them in it and some of the other species do some heavy webbing. So this could be something that I come back later on with an update, go, hey, you know what? My Udaman both started webbing up, or my Caignognathus started webbing up. We'll see. But anyway, right now it's Ephebopus murinus, easily one of my top webbers, and we'll definitely keep people updated how that goes once they get rehoused into their new homes. So next up on the list, we have one of my all-time favorite tarantulas. Now, this is an interesting one because this is one of the species that I've found, and I think others will report the same. Some of them do a lot of webbing, some of them don't, and it's really kind of a crapshoot. However, I've had a few. My first female that I raised did a lot of webbing as a sling, a lot of webbing as a juvenile, a lot of webbing as an adult. Unfortunately, she passed away semi-recently. I'm still kind of bummed about that one because I absolutely, one of the most gentle spiders I ever had, especially considering which species she was. And then I have four others that I just did a rehousing video on to show that this species isn't nearly as bad as it seems. And I actually use those Authentic Joy enclosures, which I love for them. They like perfect, gave them room to burrow, gave them room to web, which was a good thing because two of them webbed up the snout of their enclosures. Two of them, not so much. Again, there we go, 50-50. I'm talking about Pterinochilus murinus, or the infamous OBT. I've had several of these, and the majority of them do at least some webbing where the female I have and two of the other ones I have actually webbed the snout out of their enclosures. Now, funny thing, I noticed that two of them webbed a lot up, or webbed up a lot of the enclosure, all the way up the side, big tunnels, covered the whole surface, used up all those. If you remember correctly, anybody that watched the video, I used grapevines in there, some cork bark, created a bunch of anchor points for them to web to. Two of them went, oh, heck yeah, they used it. They built these big web tunnels. The other two just did a little bit of webbing around the surface, around the entrance to their burrows. And I saw one of them the other day. It was out and about. It had just molted. It's a mature male. So I'm like, oh, okay, maybe there's a difference. The mature males did the webbing. The females didn't. Well, one of the mature males webbed up the snout of the enclosure. Another one came out the other day, mature male, no webbing. Then the other two just molted, looked like to be, both of them appear to be females. One did a lot of webbing, one didn't. So go figure. And this is what I was talking about in the beginning, that it could be different for folks out there, I'm sure. Some of you will probably report, yeah, my P. murinus webbing machines, and then others will be like, nah, they did a little burrowing, maybe a little webbing around the surface, around the entrance to their den, but not all that much overall. But I had to put them on there because when they do web, they web extensively, and I remember back in the day seeing, you know, when I was just getting started in the hobby and you're on YouTube and you think YouTube's a be-all and end-all for tarantula care, not realizing a lot of stuff out there, especially back then, was not particularly great. Not a lot, back then, we'll say it's not the fault of the people that were doing it because we didn't have the information we had now. They were doing what people did back then. So for example, a lot of P. murinus were kept in shoe boxes, shorter, shallower containers. And what would happen is they go, oh, let's take a look at my orange bitey thing. It's vicious. It's so aggressive. And they'd peel the top off and it would pull all this webbing up, exposing this poor orange spider that's like, yo, what just happened? And it's thrown up the threat posture. It's going crazy. Sometimes they end up out of the enclosure because they're completely spooked because you've ripped up their whole, basically their home. So So what are they going to do? They're going to flee. And I remember seeing those and being like, man. And now that I have them, I realize if you just set them up in something, those ExoTerra cubes of 12 by 12 by 12 or 30.5, what is it, 31, 30.5 centimeters. One of these days, I'll figure it out. I've done so much conversion of inches to centimeters, you'd think I'd know the conversions by now. But anyway, one of those 31 by 31 or 30.5 by 30.5 cubes are great for them because you can put in enough dirt that they can do some burrowing, and you can put enough, leave enough room up top for them to do the webbing. But P. murinus, definitely a species that likes, often likes to do some webbing. It just depends apparently on the specimen how much of that webbing they do. Now, next one on this list just passed away. I'm still super bummed about this. I ended up putting her in the freezer because I want to bury her in the backyard, and it was a really hot day when she died, and I had a lot going on, so I didn't have time to go out and bury her where I wanted to bury her. So right now, she's in the refrigerator, preserved. I'm not going to do anything weird with her, but anyway, she was a huge webber, had completely blanketed her entire enclosure, and this became more clear after she died. And this is, I'm talking about my Harpactera pulchropes for people who haven't figured out, or golden blue leg baboon. I had this female for over 10 years. She ripped off one of her legs before she died. And as I told folks, I was trying desperately to find the leg to figure out what could have happened. And while I was ripping through that webbing, I was amazed at how thick it was. She just kept laying it down. So the webbing in some places was almost like a millimeter thick. It was like picking up when you grab the webbing and tried to pull it. It was like pulling a silk shirt. That's how strong it felt. That's how thick it was. So she continued. She started off. I gave her an enclosure with a starter burrow with a piece of cork bark. I thought she might use the starter burrow. Nope. She completely webbed over the opening of the starter burrow. She webbed over the entire enclosure. She webbed around the plant, the fake plant. She webbed around the water dish. I kept having to cut out the old water dish and drop a new one in. Definitely a heavy webber. The whole enclosure was blanketed with white, which was amazing because A, she wasn't a very defensive spider. So when you open up the enclosure, worst case scenario, she'd kind of scuttle to the side and hide behind the plant. Sometimes you just sit there right out in the open. And because she had everything webbed up and everything was white, it made for a beautiful contrast when you're trying to get photos of her. So I always appreciated that because you'd have the white in the background and then you'd have those blues popping on her legs, the golds popping on her body, just made for some beautiful photos. So really already miss this girl. And while we're talking about her, I've had kept several Harpactera species. Another one that did a lot of webbing. Two of them, I had two Harpactera baviana females that both webbed up almost as much as she did. So there's an alternate there. I'll slip another one in. The Bavianas both did. I have a large female, older female now, that her entire enclosure is also covered. So she could be kind of included in here. I was trying to focus on one per genus, but we'll mention her as well because it's almost the same, almost the amount of webbing that my Harpactera pulchropes did. But Harpactera pulchropes, my female, a lot of webbing. That other one's done a lot of webbing. I've talked to other folks that have some that didn't do very much webbing at all. They're more burrowers. Again, it's one of those old world species that it's kind of up to the spider whether or not it's going to do the webbing. All right, next up we have the species of tarantula that it took me, I think, 3, 4, 5, 8 tries to get a female. I'm talking about Neo Holothele Insi or the Trinidad Olive. I had the gold for them years ago. They all webbed quite a bit. Then I had the ones, I got 5 of them from the same sack that I was going to try to keep as a communal, but it was very obvious early on that they weren't going to do that because I caught one of them trying to eat the other one, even though there were many little roaches in there for it to eat. It was just like, no, brother, you're going. So we ended up splitting them up, and I ended up with a bunch of males, and finally got another one that ended up being a female. So excited. I love her. She is in an 8x8x12 acrylic enclosure, and she has webbed up the entire enclosure. Everything's covered in web. There are web structures everywhere. It's like a honeycomb of entrances and exits. I went to feed her the other day. I dropped the cricket in front of what I assumed was the entrance to her burrow. She shot out from underneath the webbing in another corner, came out, grabbed it, and then shot back in the one that I thought was the burrow entrance. I noticed at that point she had about 5 entrances and exits in it. So cool. I love the ones that do the honeycombing because it's like a jack in the box. You go to drop in a cricket, you never know where they're going to come out of. B, it just looks so darn cool. I am a huge fan of webbing, and that's something that I probably should have mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. I have actually had people tell me they don't like the webbing, which I guess to each his or her own. I just always found it to be such a cool thing. And if you're taking pictures of him, again, it makes for a beautiful backdrop. I have a couple good shots of her that I was able to get that she's sitting there. You know, you can kind of see some of the green poking through underneath where it was like sphagnum moss or the fake plant or whatever. But then all that white in the background really makes those colors pop. But she has done a ton of webbing and continues to web. Every once in a while, I'll sneak up here at night and I'll see her moving her little booty around. The spinnerets working, webbing up a new entrance or exit. Just a very, and then this is one that if you've ever seen the communals are usually full of webbing. They work together. They web the snot out of the communals. So I think others have experienced the webbing as well. But Neo, Halitheli, Incy, Trinidad, Olive, definitely one of my top webbers in my entire collection. And again, glad I finally got a female of this one. It took so long. I think I got my first males, oh God, it might have been 12 years ago. I took a chance and bought some juvenile males, and they all, I bought some juvenile unsex, quote unquote. All three of them ended up being male. And so it's so cool to finally have that lady I've been looking for years. Next up, we have another species I have a long history with. I got a sling way back, probably 13 years ago. And after reading, there were a good quote-unquote beginner old world species. I'd already kept several other old worlds or was keeping several other old worlds, but I wanted to try this one out. And it ended up dying. I believe at the time it might have been impacted. It looked very bloated. It had the poo on its spinnerets around its anus. Didn't think I'd be saying anus in this podcast, but here we are. Anyway, then I got another one. It grew up and it was a mature male. It was probably the smallest mature male I'd ever seen. It was about just over an inch, maybe an inch and a quarter, just tiny. And then finally got a lady and I put her into an 8x8x8 Exoterra, and she is webbed up the entire thing, much like the Neo Halitheli Incy. There are entrances and exits everywhere. I never know where she's going to pop out of. So these two are fairly equal. I think she's a little behind the Neo Halitheli Incy in terms of the amount of webbing, but that's only because she was moved into her enclosure after the fact. I'll be curious to see how it goes as she spends more time in it. I am talking about my Heterotheli villicella, or Tanzanian chestnut tarantula, or Tanzanian chestnut dwarf, or something like that. Love this little girl. She's still a tiny. This is one of the few true dwarfs I've ever kept because she is only about 2 inches or so. Very, very small, very reclusive, hides in her webbing. Again, as I mentioned earlier, she's got a honeycomb. I created an enclosure that had many levels on it. There were different cork bark stacked up. I believe I had fake plants, had some of the grapevine in there for her, and she took full advantage of it. I went another one when I go to feed her, I'm never sure where to drop the roach. Obviously, they can go hunt it later, but I always like to drop the roach right at the burrow entrance and watch them burst out and grab it, and I'm never sure where she's going to come from. But she has done a lot of webbing in the enclosure. And again, as I mentioned earlier, huge fan of the ones that do the honeycombing, where there's just all these entrances and exits. So definitely one of the heaviest webbing spiders that I keep. I know I read that about them early on when I first got interested in them. This was before I kept any real big heavy webbers. I was really excited to get one. And now that I have one, I can see how cool they really are. It's weird for this one because it's like that was one of the first old worlds I got back in the day. And I always vowed I would get a female someday. So it's so cool this many years later to finally get that girl. So much like, again, the Neo Halitheli Incy, which is why I have these two, you know, next to each other. They're actually close to each other on the shelf because, I don't know, they kind of scratch that same. There's kind of a, they remind me of just getting into the hobby and starting to grow in the hobby. So anyway, Heterotheli, Villicella, Tanzanian chestnut, definitely really good webbers. Again, and I should mention this, but both the Neo Halitheli Incy, Heterotheli villicella are two species that have been kept communally with success. I've had several people, every time I put up a villicella video, somebody will come on and say, oh yeah, I've kept these communally before. I'm not doing the communals much anymore. I mean, besides an M-Balfouri communal, I'm not playing around with the communals anymore because I think, I don't know, I feel responsible to a point where everybody is trying to find a new communal species now, and I'll have folks come on my old communal videos and go, oh, I'm keeping these together, and it's like, those aren't species that can be kept communally, and they're like, well, you never know. Yes, we know. So I'm trying to steer away from the communal stuff, but I have seen video of Heterotheli villicella communal. It was really cool to see them all working together to create that honeycomb web. Same thing as a Neo Halitheli Incy, but again, with any communal, there's always a chance it's not going to go well. And it seems like with the quote-unquote true communal species, the ones that we see in the wild actually are communal, some cannibalism is to be expected. You're going to drop, you know, 100 slings in there. There may be 50 left at the end. That's natural. And then once things level off, then they live peacefully together. But until that point, it's going to be kind of like the Hunger Games, and I don't need to see that. So H. Villicella, definitely a heavy webber. Next one up is not a tarantula. It is actually a wafer trap door spider, but I had to put it on there because, again, lots of thick webbing up top. Some of that honeycombing where there's all these entrances and exits. This one, I put it in an enclosure. It not only burrowed all the way down the bottom, but then webbed all the way up to the top. I'm talking about Fufius species gold, or Rerenabake, I believe, is also, I did a lot of research. It sounds like it might be the same species, but regardless, they're both very, very, they're gold. They're wafer trapdoor spiders, and they do a lot of webbing. I had two of them. Unfortunately, one of them ended up being a mature male, and after he matured out, he didn't eat very well after that, didn't live very long, but he had filled up most of his enclosure. I had them in, I think, 3x3x7 inch or so little sliding top acrylic enclosures that I picked up off of Amazon. I filled them with like 2.5-3 inches of substrate, cork bark, and dropped them in there with the starter burrow. They did some burrowing and then webbed up the entire top half of the enclosure. And I'm looking over at my females right now, and she's got probably half the enclosure, so about probably close to 3 or 4 inches completely webbed up. So these guys did a lot of webbing. Again, another spider, when you drop something in, you're never quite sure where it's going to burst out from. I have her in an enclosure that I think at the size of the spider, I thought it would be an appropriate size for her, but she's filled this thing up with so much webbing that now I'm kind of considering maybe moving her into something bigger. I'm torn because I don't know how long these guys live. I had this girl for quite a while. I know the Fufia species live a lot longer than megalomorphs. They live longer than true spiders, but I'm not sure quite how long they live. So I'd hate to rip up all her webbing, put her in a new enclosure if she's, you know, winding down. So we'll play that one by ear. But right now, when I slide that little top off, it's always basically glued in there with webbing. Luckily, I can pull it out without damaging the webbing too much, but she has definitely done a ton of webbing. And every once in a while, I'll catch her sitting out in the open on the webbing. And once again, there's nothing like taking photos of these guys when they have those nice colors that pop against that all-white background. So Fufia species gold, not a tarantula. I want to make that clear. Awesome little, you know, wafer trapdoor spider. I haven't seen the trapdoor action. What I've seen is a spider that creates a bunch of webbing, hides in its burrow. When it gets triggered, it bursts out of one of those entrances and grabs it. But maybe some folks have seen the actual trapdoor that I haven't seen. But they're still amazing spiders, cool spiders nonetheless. All right, next up, we have this one coming in at number 3 on our arbitrary number of this list. I guess not. I tried to give some thought about it, but honestly, any of these, it could be number 3 through 1. Well, 3 through 2. You'll see when we get to number 1. Most of these could be any number. But we have the Chromatic Pelma cyanopubescens, or everybody's favorite green bottle blue, or GBB. These guys are known for their heavy webbing, and mine have not disappointed. I raised up 2 females that I got, I think it was 12 or 13 years ago. Fortunately, they passed right around 10 years old or so. One of them was close to 11. Both of them webbed the snot out of their enclosure. This is where I realized it with GBBs. I think for a long time, we called them terrestrials, and they are terrestrial to a point, but they have been spotted climbing up trees and nesting or building up their burrows in brush off of the ground. And I think that when we put them in shallower containers and don't allow them to kind of expand with the webbing, you can have a more, how should we put it, rambunctious, more skittish tarantula. And I explained to folks that when I had my females, I put them in the Sterilite boxes, or like 16 inches by 11 inches or so by about 6.5 inches tall. And both of them went through a phase where as soon as I took the top off that enclosure, they freaked out. They would run, they would kick all kinds of hairs, they were unruly. And then I decided I was going to put one of them into an Exoterra 12x12x12 or 31x31x31 centimeter enclosure. I gave her room up top. Originally, it was a planted enclosure. She covered all the plants and killed them, but my gosh, did she web. And from that point on, she was very, very calm. If I opened the enclosure, most of the time she'd just sit there because I think there was enough room between me and her that she didn't freak out. And if she did get a little scared, she'd just calmly go around and walk behind the webbing. But she webbed the snot out of that enclosure. I remember after she passed, cleaning out the enclosure, pulling out these sheets of thick webbing. She had covered everything. I had a fern in there. She completely covered up the fern. I had a, it was a rubber plant or a snake plant. completely covered the snake plant, killed that, covered the cork bark, and then she would just sit out there loud and proud right out in the open, which again, for those photo ops, fantastic. And then the other one I eventually moved into a 12 by 12. Unfortunately, I did it way later on, and she was alive for about a year in that one, but same thing. She webbed up, she sat up there, her attitude completely went away. She was no longer as skittish. So I do think that's a key to keeping these. We will not use the term semi-arboreal because there's people out there that freak the heck out and don't get it. And unfortunately, people that hear it and they go, oh, arboreal, I'm going to give her 3 feet. That's not what I'm saying. We're going to call it terrestrial plus. Same thing as the OBT. It means technically they're terrestrial, but give them some room up top to do their webbing. A couple, if you have a 5.5-6 inch spider and you put it, you have a 12 inch high enclosure and you put in about 5 or 6 inches of substrate, that is not enough height for it to injure itself and fall damage, as long as you're not putting a bunch of sharp items in there that it could fall on. And once they go ahead and do their webbing, there's nothing from the fall and they web everything up. It's all nice and cushioned. So Chromatopelma cyanea pubescens, definitely one of the top. This is one of the ones where people are like, hey, I'm getting into the hobby, I've kept a couple spiders, what's a good heavily webbing species? This is a good one to start off with, especially for folks that don't have a lot of experience yet with old worlds. I think it's a great, somebody just contacted me and said, is a cyanea pubescens a good stepping stone spider to eventually keeping an M. balfouri? And I was like, actually, this is the one I recommend the most, because as we've talked about many times in the past, I can't tell you how many folks will get a GBB and then tell me, oh my gosh, I'm so freaked out, they're so fast. Which for those of us who have kept other tarantulas, like the old world species, the arboreals, some of the, you know, Salmopius species, they're not as fast as those. They're not anywhere near as fast. But I think for many, it's people's first foray into keeping a spider that's not a gab spider. Now, it's a Gramostola, Faunapelma, Brachypelma species. Those tend to be, you know, they're capable of speed. They tend to be a little slower, though. Overall, these guys can really boogie and will use their speed if need be. But again, it's a good stepping stone to keeping. They act a lot like an old world, I think, where if you give them room to web, they'll bolt into their web and rather run and hide. But they can also be, if you don't give them room, they're going to bolt around, and rehousings can be kind of fun. Of course, with a GBB, you have to contend with the hairs where you wouldn't with an old world, but I do think they're a good stepping stone. So Chromatopelma, cyanea pubescens, green bottle blue, or GBB, definitely one of the heaviest webbing. I got a new one now that is a juvenile still. I think next molt, I'd consider it a young adult. Web the snot out of the enclosure I gave it. It'll be fun when I have to rehouse it and to dig it out of the webbing. I might just pick the whole mess up and drop it in the new enclosure. We'll see how it goes. Now, next up, we have the last tarantula species that will appear on this list. We're at number 2. This one, I toyed with which one. Chromatopelma could definitely be up here. I think this one being a dwarf, and for its size, the Chromatopelma tend to blanket everything. They'll build some structures like a den to hide in, but these ones will often do the honeycombing, which again is something that I love to see. And they tend to blanket everything. Like as slings, they filled their enclosures with webbing. As juveniles, web the snot out of it. I just rehoused one into her new enclosure. Unfortunately, she has not settled in yet and done a lot of webbing, which is kind of disappointing. I was kind of hoping she'd start by now, but I'm sure she'll eventually settle in and start doing it. We are talking about Dolichothele diamantinensis, or the Brazilian blue beauty, or the Brazilian blue dwarf beauty, or the Brazilian blue beauty dwarf. I don't know. The common names, there's a million of them. Anyway, I've kept several of these. All of them have done extensive webbing. The last one I just rehoused, and I think I was able to show she was in one of those sterilite containers I use for juveniles or larger slings, and she had webbed it up to the point, I think there was like 2 inches of substrate in it, and she had webbed the rest of it. It's about 6 inches deep, all the way up to the top of the point. Every time I go to feed her, I'd have to rip off webbing. So it was blatantly obvious at that point she needed to be in something larger, and I actually caught her out in the open not that long ago, was shocked at how big she had gotten, because I don't see her all that much, because these guys can be rather reclusive. And where do they run and hide to when startled? Their web burrows. They love webbing up everything, creating these thick web burrows that they hide in. I put them, these are another ones that I give the terrestrial plus enclosures to. I want to give them some height because they're going to web up to the top and probably right up to where you try to open the enclosure. I had one in a female years ago in one of those M design enclosures, and she quickly, it was very obvious very early on that she needed more room, because she webbed immediately right up to the top of the enclosure, to the point where it's like, I'm going to have to rehouse her soon to give her more room to web. So I'd be curious to see if you give them even more room, more height, how much they do. But this is a species that really does consistently, I've heard from many folks, they do a lot of webbing, a lot of thick white webbing. I've had some folks tell me, it seems like with this species, behaviorally, some folks have ones that are more calm, laid back. I've had people tell me, yeah, I have one that I could hold. It's so laid back. Mine have always been very skittish and more shy, and they would rather bolt and hide than stand their ground. My one I just rehoused, again, didn't see her all that much because anytime I picked her enclosure up off of the shelf to do, you know, watering or to drop a prey item in, she would hide. But the Dolichothela diamantinensis, Brazilian blue beauty, definitely one of the heaviest webbing spiders out there. I think consistently, I'm sure somebody will chime in after I do the podcast and post it and say that theirs didn't web at all. And I completely believe you, but the majority of us out there, I think, find that this is a species that you can almost be assured is going to do a lot of webbing when you set them up. So now we are on to the number one of this list, and this is the number one. I think when I made the list, the first one that popped into my mind, and there's going to be a couple species on this because I can't really settle on one because they're all about equal, but when I sat down, the first thing I did when I took my notes is wrote these down and then built the list around them because there is nothing that touches these guys in terms of the amount of webbing they produce, the thickness of the webbing they produce, the number of entrances and exits. I mean, we're talking it's thick, it's high. We are talking about, unfortunately, not a tarantula. We are talking about Diplurridae or the curtain web spiders. These guys are master webbers. Now, there are obviously other species out there. Macrothelae gigas is one that I've been eyeing for years that is a super heavy webber. I'd love to get one sometime, but I don't have one yet. I will eventually. But Diplurridae are some of the most prolific webbers, the most prolific webbers of anything I've kept, bar none. I have mine in 5-gallon glass. I think they're Zoomed or Reptazoo makes them, and I bought a bunch of them for my fossorial species. Anyway, I have those, and I have the Barbarus or reptile growth enclosures. They're about the exact same size, and what I usually do is I put them in there when they're about 2.5-3 inches or so with a couple inches of substrate, some, you know, anchor points, and they don't even need anchor. They fill the entire enclosures with webbing. You have to see it to believe it. It's not just thick, it's deep. It's 7-8 inches deep at some spots. It's tough sometimes to even add moisture to their aquariums or their habitats because of the fact there's so much webbing in there. I have to kind of use the back of a paintbrush, carefully open up a hole and pour it down the side, or else it just pools on the top. But these guys take webbing to a new level. These are ones in the wild that go in the bases of plants around areas, and they web all out of it, all around it, create these massive intricate webs so that when animals come in and trigger it, they rush out. They use their speed. They're very lithe and long-legged, scuttle out, grab it, go back in and retreat to their webbing. And obviously I've posted a ton of videos of these guys online, mostly shorts of them feeding because I enjoy watching them burst out of them. Again, another one that you can't sometimes figure out which hole, which entrance or exit it's going to come out of when it comes to hunt, which can really create that jack-in-the-box feel because these are big spiders. My Harmonicon oipoki, the first one I had, was 7 inches across when she molted. That is a huge spider to not be a tarantula. And when they come out, they move. So sometimes you drop one in like the upper front corner, the spider bursts out of the back corner, runs over the web and grabs it, and then retreats back in. It's so much fun to watch. But these guys, I love them. They're fast growing overall. They're huge, huge spiders. Beautiful looking, and the webbing is just incredible. I had a mature male pass away, and the ones that, you know, we'll talk about, Linothelae sericata, Linothelae phallax. I had a Linothelae species Columbia, I think, did a ton of webbing. Harmonicon oipoki, another one, does a lot of webbing. They're just super heavily webbing animals. It takes webbing to a brand new level as far as I'm concerned, and I am somebody that love spiders that do a lot of webbing. So when I first got these guys and set them up and saw how quickly they filled up their enclosures, I was just immediately enamored. They're just the coolest spiders. So I don't think there can be any other number one for me right now with what I keep. And this is one I can say, if you're not concerned or whether or not you have a tarantula, if you just want a heavily webbing spider, definitely check out the Diplurridae. See what there is out there, especially some of the big ones, Linothelae sericata, phallax, H. oipoki. I don't think there's much out there that does more. Again, the Macrothelae, I, from what I've gathered, on par with them, haven't kept it yet. But for the most part, nothing out there in the pet trade is going to rival these in terms of spiders that do a lot of webbing. They're just that amazing. unless somebody else has something they think beats them. I haven't seen it in my collection. That's my hard number one. The rest of them can kind of all be switched around. But of course, now comes to the point where I ask you guys, what do you have that webs a lot? What are some of your heaviest webbing species? What are some, I'm sure some of you have spiders that I haven't kept yet that I can't comment on. Again, I can only talk about my own experience. What have you found to be the heaviest webbing species of spiders out there? It doesn't have to be tarantulas. It can be true spiders. It can be mygalomorphs, trapdoor, whatever it may be. Let me know. I'd love to hear your comments. I'd love to be able to do an update on this or at least follow through and comment on this more next episode so that people hear what I have to say and then hear what you have to say. So that will do it for this one. I am amazed that I made it through this because I'm going to be completely honest. I had to pause four different times during this because the pain was ripping through the side of my face so bad that I couldn't even speak. But I did it. You know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, I guess. And I'm glad that I made it through this one because this was a lot of fun to do. This will be one I'll probably cover as a video eventually on YouTube because I think it's one thing to talk about the webbing. It's another thing to see it. And I can stop trying to come up with adjectives for heavy webbing or whatever, but that'll definitely be one I'll do in the future this summer. Let me know what your choices are. As always, you can find me on thomasbigspiders.com. You can leave comments. I do appreciate the ones that leave comments on Spotify. That's unfortunately, I can't respond back to them. But again, it looks good for people that are on. I didn't even realize until very recently that we had a pretty good audience on Spotify. A lot, it used to be just Apple was where everybody listened to the podcast when you looked at like the when I look at my stats page on Buzzsprout, it'll tell you basically what everybody's listening to the podcast on. And for a long time it was Apple, but Spotify has been taking over. So I love the fact they've added the ability for people to be able to comment because I think that shows a live podcast. That shows, all right, not only is this still going on, is this information current, but people are reacting to it. And obviously if they listen to the podcast, they realize I read those reactions and sometimes read them out loud on the next episode. So let's see what you got as far as, you know, the ones you're heavy webbers. YouTube, obviously I just posted up, we rehoused my Pamphibidius antinus female that I've had. I was shocked to find out she's probably 11 or 12 years old. Time's getting away from me. I should probably know that considering it's been 10 years of Thomas Big Spiders, the YouTube page, and I think the actual website might be going on 11 years, and I had been keeping for a little while before I even started any of those, so it's really cool to think some of these animals I've had for a decade. But we ended up rehousing her only because I wanted to give her more room to burrow, because this is one of the things I've been changing in my care, is recognizing that if something wants to burrow, I'm going to give it the opportunity to burrow. And I had it in my head that she might appreciate it. And we put her in one of the tarantula cribs, 12, I think it's 12 by 12 by 18 or 12 by 12 by 16 enclosures, big enclosure. I gave her like 6 or 7 inches of substrate, starter burrow, cork bark, fake plant, some leaf litter just in case. We put her in, and when I rehoused her, she wouldn't come out of the cup. She's a stubborn one. She wouldn't move, and she's a strong girl. So I left the cup in there. I was hoping she would come out of the cup. I left it right in the front of the starter burrow. Well, as I was editing the video, and after I'd shot the outro where I said, yeah, unfortunately, she hasn't adopted the burrow yet, she went into the burrow. So I took the cup out, got some footage of that, was able to tack it on the end of the video. But I came up this morning, and she was pulling a big thing of dirt out. She'd been digging all night, and it expanded the burrow. So I'm so excited. Will I see her as much? No, but I don't care. I want her to be comfortable, and I think this is going to allow her to be much more comfortable. So next one that's going to get a rehousing into something like this is my Pamphibidius species, Duran female. She is probably close to 10 years old now. She originally was burrowed in her enclosure, but since it kind of collapsed and she doesn't have a burrow, so when I open it, she seems very scared. So I want to give her something to burrow to. And then my Pamphibidius species, Araña Pollito, also has a burrow. She's in it all the time. Again, it's all about giving them what they want and what they need. And I found that moving ahead, if they'll burrow, I'm going to give them the room to burrow. If they don't, who cares? So they've got a couple extra inches of dirt. What does it matter? So you can check that video out. That will do it for this one. As always, guys, stay safe. Have a happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there, and we'll catch you all next time.